Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Alpek's fourth quarter 2016 earnings conference call. With us this morning, we have from Alpek, Jose Valdez, CEO, Eduardo Escalante, CFO, and Hernan Lozano, Head of Investor Relations, who will discuss the company's performance and answer any questions that you might have. As a reminder, today's call is being recorded and will be available on the company's website, www.alpek.com. And at this time, I'll hand the call over to Mr. Lozano. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good morning and welcome. We very much appreciate everyone's participation today. This call will be divided into two parts. First, Mr. Valdez, our CEO, and Mr. Escalante, our CFO, will provide a general overview of Alpek's 2016 performance and the outlook for 2017. Afterwards, we will open up for a Q&A session. Before we get started, let me remind you that the information discussed in today's call may include forward-looking statements regarding the company's future financial performance and prospects, which are subject to risks and uncertainties. Actual results may differ materially, and the company cautions not to rely unduly on these forward-looking statements. Alpek undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statements, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. I will now turn the call over to Mr. Pepe Valdez.
Thank you, Hernan. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. 2016 was a year of contrast for Alpek, with a significant difference between the results of the first 6 months compared to the second half, as well as between our two business segments. We faced a challenging macro environment marked by low economic growth in our core North American markets, together with volatile oil and feedstock prices. This was the third consecutive year that oil prices declined year over year, despite the recent rally driven by the OPEC agreement. Average price of Brent went down from 53 in 2015 to 44 per barrel in 2016, and fluctuated between a minimum of 31 per barrel in January and maximum of 54 in December. Similarly, the U.S. paraxylene contract price posted its highest 2016 level in December, but its annual average was 12% lower year over year. This environment weighed in our polyester segment, which was also impacted by weak polyester fiber demand and extraordinary events such as Hurricane Matthew in the fourth quarter. In contrast, the plastic and chemical segment posted a record EBITDA driven by record margins and volume from our polypropylene and expandable polystyrene businesses. In this context, Alpek's consolidated EBITDA was above our original $630 million guidance, but below our revised $700 million guidance, as plastic and chemicals growth was offset by lower than expected polyester results. On the investment front, 2016 was the third consecutive year with more than $300 million in CapEx, most of which was directed at growth initiatives. We are excited by the prospect of both our strategic projects and the acquisitions that we closed last year. The Altamira Cogeneration Facility, the Corpus Christi Integrated PET Plant, and the Huntsman MEG supply agreement were the three largest projects under development in 2016. The 350-megawatt power cogeneration plant that is being built at our Altamira complex accounted for almost 40% of Alpek's 2016 consolidated CAPEX. Our engineering, procurement, and construction contractor is working full speed on a turnkey project that is scheduled for delivery before year-end 2018. Simultaneously, commercial efforts are underway to engage potential customers and sign multi-year purchase agreement in anticipation to the plant start-up, leveraging valuable know-how from our first cogeneration project. Roughly 20% of the power available for sale has been allocated so far. Alpek also completed its investment in the supply right to 500,000 tons per year of integrated PET from the Corpus Christi plant. The aggregate amount of supply rights comprises agreements signed with M&G in 2013 and 2015. The first one involving 400,000 tons, and the second one for additional 100,000 tons per year, and an amount that was and the investment was paid in full during 2015. Last year, we also granted a $60 million loan to MNG as additional support for the final stages of construction. The new facility is expected to begin operating in 2017, starting with PET production and then PTA. We very much look forward to our share of integrated PET from the most modern and efficient plant in the region. The Holzman MEG supply agreement represents two important milestones for Alpek. This is our first venture into monoethylene glycol as we seek alternatives to capture the North American ethylene advantage. This is our second major project to come online following the Cosolecaque cogeneration plant startup in 2015. Beginning in June, savings from the Holzman tolling agreement complement the savings from the Cosolecaque power cogeneration facility. As you may recall, this is a $65 million multi-year agreement that involves contractual rights to 150,000 tons per year of monoethylene glycol from Holzman plant in Port Neches, Texas. We are also active. We were also active in the M&A front, closing two acquisitions that complement our existing business and signing an agreement with Petrobras to acquire its polyester operations in Brazil. Early in 2016, we acquired 20,000 tons per year of EPS plant in Chile, which increased our installed EPS capacity in South America by more than 30%. We also closed a deal for a controlling interest in Selenis Canada, which operates the only PET facility in that country. Efforts are currently focused on the business turnaround to achieve positive EBITDA in 2017. On December, we signed a $385 million agreement with Petrobras to acquire Petrochimica Suape and Citepe. For now, the process to close the transaction is on hold at Petrobras as it faces an injunction in Brazil determining the suspension of the sale of this asset. Petrobras has publicly stated that it's taking all the necessary judicial measures to protect its investors and own interests. The suspension has no economic effect on Alpek since we have not made any payments, and the agreement announced in December remains in place until further notice. We look forward to resuming the agreed-upon approval process as soon as this matter is resolved by Petrobras. This was also a meaningful year in terms of industry developments. In March, the U.S. Internal Trade Commission made an affirmative final determination in its anti-dumping and countervailing duty investigations on PET resin imports from China, India, Oman, and Canada. Furthermore, 2016 was the first year since 2010 in which PTA demand growth exceeded capacity expansion in China, according to industry experts. Even though Asian reference polyester margins remain at historical lows, this situation is necessary for the Chinese supply-demand balance to improve and support a gradual recovery in global polyester margins. For 2017, our outlook reflects a significant headwind coming from margin pressures in several of our products. As announced earlier today, we expect a 25% year-over-year decrease in consolidated EBITDA due to lower polypropylene and expandable polystyrene margins after two consecutive years posting record results. On top of that, we anticipate PET margin contraction in the U.S. due to historical low margins in Asia. Despite the downturn, both our polypropylene and expandable polystyrene businesses are expected to generate healthy EBITDA supported by solid industry and company-specific fundamentals. In the case of our PET business, we view the margin pressure as a relatively short-term effect caused by implementation of the only project in our pipeline that involves a shift in regional market share. But Corpus Christi holds far more long-term benefits for Alpek and the region's competitiveness than its immediate impact on margins. We are also mindful of the increased volatility in global financial markets, as well as the uncertainty surrounding the Mexico-U.S. trade relationship, which has caused significant depreciation of the Mexican peso. In this context, disciplined financial management becomes increasingly important. Additionally, OPEC holds a solid position to mitigate the impact from extreme hypothetical scenarios based on three fundamental elements. We have a very resilient dollar-denominated cash flow, a strong balance sheet supported by long-term fixed rate debt, low leverage ratios, and high interest rate coverage, and geographic diversification. Very important for us is the fact that our U.S.-based capacity serving our cost U.S. markets is actually, we have excess capacity than demand in the U.S. So we believe we are relatively immune to any change in NAFTA or any change related to the border tax adjustment. I have confidence in our team and in the capital allocation decisions we're making to provide a solid platform for future growth. At this point, I would like to turn the call over to Eduardo.
Thank you, Pepe, and good morning, everyone. At the beginning of 2016, we anticipated lower year-over-year sales and flat EBITDA amid an unfavorable $38 per barrel oil price environment. In addition, CapEx was expected to remain above $300 million as in 2014 and 2015. In fact, consolidated sales in 2016 were slightly better than expected, as lower than estimated volume growth was offset by higher prices. Full year CapEx was also above our original estimates, mainly due to the Selenis acquisition, which was not included in our guidance. The biggest surprise was EBITDA benefiting from peak polypropylene margins in the first quarter, together with an oil price recovery between January and June. In the middle of the year, we revised our EBITDA guidance up from $630 million to $700 million, reflecting a stronger-than-expected first half and a sequential slowdown in the third and fourth quarters as polypropylene margins decrease. Unfortunately, consolidated EBITDA of $669 million was short of our revised guidance, as a result of lower-than-expected results in our polyester segment. When comparing 2016 and 2015 EBITDA, it is important to take into consideration the following. 2015 consolidated EBITDA includes a $50 million non-cash inventory charge that is partially offset by a $26 million one-time profit from the sale of our polyurethane business. Similarly, 2016 consolidated EBITDA includes a $24 million non-cash inventory gain, a $6 million insurance claim cash gain, and a $2 million non-cash gain from acquired EPS assets. Adjusting for these non-operating items, Alpek 2016 comparable consolidated EBITDA was $637 million, down 3% versus 2015, as a 13% increase in plastics and chemicals was more than offset by a 13% decrease in polyester. Comparable 2016 polyester EBITDA was $331 million, with the lowest quarterly EBITDA posted in 4Q16, as supply chain disruptions caused by Hurricane Matthew in the Carolinas, led Alpek to issue a month-long force majeure on our PET resin products in the U.S. As a result of this event, we incur on incremental logistics, fixed, and startup costs. Polyester EBITDA was also negatively affected by a low oil and feedstock price environment. Weak demand of polyester fibers, and the integration of Selenis Canada. In contrast, comparable 2016 plastics and chemicals EBITDA reached a record $308 million, driven by historically high polypropylene and expandable polystyrene performance. The combination of a tight supply-demand balance and low feedstock costs supported higher average polypropylene margins. Additionally, our EPS business benefited from a successful integration of recent acquisitions, in addition to a temporary upswing in margins. Moving down on the P&L, Alpek consolidated majority net income totaled $198 million, up 13% year-over-year as a result of higher operating income. Regarding our balance sheet and certain cash flow items, net debt was $1.04 billion, up 44%, or $320 million versus year-end 2015, largely driven by CapEx. CapEx reached $345 million, mainly due to the ongoing investment in growth initiatives. In addition to the three projects and two acquisitions described by Pepe, we advanced in the construction of two propylene spheres and the EPS expansion in Altamira. The second largest cash flow item in 2016 was dividends. The consolidated $225 million figure includes a payment from Polioles to its JV partners, Alpek and BASF, following the sale of the polyurethane and EPS businesses. The dividend paid by Polioles is offset by payments that the company received during the year. Adjusting for this particular dividend, consolidated dividends grew 6% year over year compared to the reported 41%. At the close of 2016, our net leverage ratio stands at 1.6 times and interest coverage at 10.5 times. Finally, I would like to share some insights to our view for 2017. Our 2017 estimates are based on a $55 per barrel average Brent price, compared to a $44 per barrel average in 2015. As reference, we use an exchange rate of 21.5 pesos per US dollar and assume GDP growth is slowed down in Mexico and the U.S. In this context, we expect sales to increase 5% year-over-year as a result of 4% estimated volume growth and a higher oil price environment. The 2017 consolidated EBITDA is expected to be $502 million, down 20%. Or $135 million versus the comparable 2016 figure of $637 million. The reduction of polypropylene and EPS margins account for approximately $110 million of the estimated year-over-year decrease in EBITDA. Pressure on PTA margins due to historical low Asian margins, is another key element. The benefit of a higher oil price environment and incremental EBITDA from other parts of our business is expected to be more than offset by lower polypropylene, EPS, and PET margins. Consolidated 2017 CapEx is estimated to be $238 million, making this the first year since 2013 with CapEx below $300 million. We anticipate a $107 million year-over-year reduction as we enter the final stretch of our CapEx program. The Altamira Cogeneration Project will be the largest organic investment in 2017. The potential PQS acquisition is not considered in our 2017 CapEx guidance. The suspension imposed on Petrobras needs to be resolved for us to have a better assessment on timing. As a reference, prior to the suspension, we had estimated the closing process to take approximately 6 months after both parties obtained the necessary internal approvals. We are using this time to explore different funding alternatives that would allow us to capture this strategic opportunity during a low EBITDA period without exceeding our internal 2.5 times net leverage threshold. The sale of our Cosoleacaque cogeneration facility is among a number of options that is being evaluated. We believe this facility is subject to a potentially attractive valuation based on a strong investor interest in this type of asset with a proven track record. Nevertheless, the first step to move forward is for Petrobras to lift the suspension on the sale, to resume the closing process and decide on the optimal financing option. From a cash flow perspective, we expect to offset this year's lower EBITDA with a combination of lower CapEx, recovery of net working capital, and lower taxes. Considering these elements, net debt should be flat year over year with a net debt to EBITDA ratio of approximately 2 times. This concludes my remarks, and I would now like to open the call for questions. Operator, please instruct the participants on how to place their questions.
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touchtone phone, and also make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, that is star 1 to ask a question, and we'll pause for just a moment. We will take our first question today from Nicholas Lippmann with Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen, and thanks for taking my question. Where do I start? I think on the $500 million guidance, certainly a big drop. Could you give a bit more color on how much of that would come from the polyester division, how much of that would come from the polypropylene business that seems to be normalizing really, really fast? And also, if you can talk a little bit about the dynamics in the PET, especially ahead of all the new capacity coming on later this year from you and M&G. Second question, I was intrigued by that loan to M&G. Was it $60 million? Where do you keep that loan on the balance sheet? And also, what is the guarantee that you would have? Would that be in Altamira or would that be in Corpus Christi? And then finally, if you could share with us the oil price assumption, and sorry if I missed that in your initial remarks, but the oil price assumption that you have for your guidance. Thank you very much.
Okay, Nikolai, this is Pepe. Let me start by answering your first questions, and then I will turn to Eduardo, perhaps, to answer the questions regarding the balance sheet. Let me start by explaining the difference of 2017 versus 2016. Again, I think most of the difference, as Eduardo explained, I mean, if you consider the comparable EBITDA around 635 in 2016, 110 million of difference come from margins from the polypropylene and expandable polystyrene business. I would say this 110, round numbers, perhaps 90 million is polypropylene margins, and 20 million would be EPS margins. And so this is the major impact that we have in the results versus last year. Again, the truth is that the polypropylene business fundamentals in North America remain strong. Capacity utilization is relatively high; it's above 90%. And in fact, during the first month and a half, we have experienced a significant increase in raw material prices, in propylene prices. For you to understand, propylene prices in December were 31 cents per pound. The price contract price in the U.S. increased 10 cents per pound, roughly, to 41 cents per pound. And the good news is that we were able to pass along into the market all of this increase. Now, in February, we are expecting an additional increase that might take the price to perhaps 47 cents per pound. And again, we are being successful in let's say, increasing our prices to compensate for that increase in raw material. So again, this has been our experience during the first 2 months, which I consider to be very relevant. I mean, just imagine, in 2 months, we were able to compensate a 50% increase in raw material in our sales prices. This would be impossible to do in an environment where the market is not strong. This is, however, not good news because we wanted to increase margins, but to increase margins in an environment where your raw material costs are increasing 50% in 2 months is very difficult. However, we are estimating that this price of propylene this price of propylene will come down again, starting perhaps as early as March. And as the prices come down, I do believe our opportunities to increase margins, not only to maintain margins, but to increase margins, should be better. And perhaps then, if we can accomplish that, we do have, I believe, an opportunity to do better than our guidance and than our budget. In our guidance, we're assuming that the margins remain at the same level as in December last year. Okay, and as I say, the first 2 months we were able to do that in spite of this price increase on raw materials. And again, hopefully, if prices of propylene come down, we should be able to perhaps increase a little bit and do better than our guidance. But there is so much volatility and uncertainty that at this point we decided to maintain margins similar to the end of last year.
Just to follow on, just to be sure I get it right. So basically you're saying you would expect polyester pricing and margins, or especially margins.
No, I was talking polypropylene, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but you basically 100% of the decline in the EBITDA in 17 or 16 would come from your plastics division rather than the polyester division. So you're seeing a healthy. Would that be a correct way of interpreting what you said there?
I think, Nicolai, you're right, but it would be more not 100%, perhaps an 80%. 80% coming from plastics, 20% coming from polyester. And let me jump to polyester now. In polyester, we are experiencing lower margins in 17 than in 16. And I would say, Nicolai, the biggest reason for that has to do with imports from Asia. As you might remember, early 2016, we were able to have anti-dumping and countervailing duties in the U.S. And since then, imports from India, Oman, Canada, and China have decreased significantly. What we experienced in 2016 is increased imports into the U.S. from Taiwan, Brazil, Korea, and Pakistan, mainly. To some extent, Indonesia, Thailand also, but there was a significant increase. The end result being that in 2016, imports of PET into the U.S. reached a record amount of 609,000 tons for the full year. This was even higher than the imports in 15 of 532,000. So what I'm saying is, in spite of having been successful with this dumping and countervailing duty against these four countries, other countries took their position. And again, it is fair to say that we're now starting our own analysis to do the same with these new countries that have started this dumping or these exports into the U.S. In many of these cases, I would say in practically all of these cases, these imports are coming below cash cost. So the importers are not even covering the cash cost. And in some cases, the importers are exporting below variable cost, which, again, is a very difficult situation to understand. So again, in polyester, as a result of these additional imports, we are expecting in 2017 a decrease in margin for PET as well. Okay? However, as I said, we are taking prompt actions, and we do expect to be ready to file a case against these countries by the end of the second quarter this year. Okay, so, again, in polyester we do see some reduction in margin that is created by these additional imports from these other countries. And we're planning to take action, given that our preliminary analysis indicates that these countries are indeed selling, as I say, below cash cost and or variable cost. So that would be the explanation with respect to polyester. We do have a negative impact in polyester this year in terms of margin. Okay?
Thank you.
Now, what was the second question? In terms of crude oil assumptions?
The crude oil assumption and the loan to M&G.
Okay. Crude oil assumption, I think Eduardo explained that. I think we are assuming $55 of Brent prices, which we seem to be right on target right now. We seem to be very close to our forecast. And in terms of M&G, the loan, well, the loan was basically to make sure that the project is finished on time and to avoid a delay in the start-up of the project. That's the main consideration and for that loan.
And regarding the balance sheet, Nicolai, good morning, this is Eduardo. It is included in other non-current assets, which increased during the quarter by $70 million, being, of course, this the most important element.
Okay. I imagine it was do you have guarantee in any assets or in any in what is the guarantee that you have for that loan, and why did they not just go to a bank?
Well, I think that we as I say, was in order to, I mean, the issue has been an overrun in the project, an increase in the investment, and the reason we came into this, they did get a loan, an additional loan from a bank, but we supplemented that loan to make this process move faster, to avoid a delay in the startup of the plant, and we do have guarantees on our loan, as we do have also in our previous investment. So the full amount of money that we have invested, so the money we invested in the original money we invested in the project, and this $90 million, we do have guarantees on both of these disbursements.
Got it. Thank you very much.
And we'll take the next question from Vanessa Quiroga with Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi, Pepe, Eduardo. Thanks for the call. My question is about the guidance. Can you provide the guidance that you are giving for each chain, for polyester and for plastics and chemicals, please?
Sure. Hi, Vanessa. For polyester, it is $304 million all in all for 17, and for plastics and chemicals, it is $198 million.
Okay. Thank you. And would you be able to provide the natural gas price assumption that you have for the guidance? Are you assuming a specific oil to gas ratio for the guidance? Because natural gas
sure is 3.2. The guidance considers $3.2 per million BTUs Henry Hub price.
Okay, that's great. And sorry,
which again, we seem to be right on target up to now.
At least.
And I tell you that because it's very rare that we are so close to the.
I mean, you look at
the futures. Right? I think the futures for the remaining of the year are 3.18. So we seem to be on target both for the crude oil price as well as the natural gas price.
Okay. And now going into a couple of details regarding the feedstock prices for the chains. In the case of polypropylene, can you get contracts to secure or have more visibility on the prices of your raw material for polypropylene, or do you find that to not provide any benefit really for to protect your margin?
Well, the contract price for polypropylene is set on a month-to-month basis. So it's on a monthly basis. And we've looked at the possibilities of hedging, but it's honestly sort of very risky. The way the market works, you know, sometimes we have market prices for raw materials and prices for polypropylene. At this point in time, what I was saying before, the market prices are pretty much following the raw material prices. So if you hedge, you will have to have a hedge with your customer as well. Otherwise, it will be sort of speculating. And at this time, we feel comfortable with that. We do still have some quantities when our prices are indeed propylene plus. So it means we sell polypropylene at propylene plus a margin. So in that case, we don't have to worry because we immediately pass along the increase in propylene. In the past, probably 70% or 80% of our sales were based on these cost plus contracts. But 2 years ago, when we saw this tightening of the market coming, we decided to change most of those contracts from cost plus to market prices because we saw the market being stronger, and indeed we were right. And the margins that were typically in the 10 cent per pound range, early last year we had a month with 32 cents per pound. So just imagine if we have kept the old contract. So right now, as I say, we still see strong fundamentals for this industry, and that's the reason why most of our sales are still based on market prices. And what I mentioned before, I think the good news for us was that in January and in February, in spite of these very large increases, we've been able to maintain our margin. And again, if you were to sign a cost plus, it would be very difficult for you to sign a cost plus with a 15 or 16 or 17 cents per pound margin. So for that reason, we have remained as we are. It can create some volatility, but I think again in the conditions we are seeing in the market today, I think is the best way to go.
Right now, what percentage of your sales have that cost plus formula for polypropylene?
I would dare to say that we used to be 70-30 or 80-20, 70-80 cost plus. I would say now we're probably the other way around. Probably 80% market, 20% cost plus.
Okay. And a question about Corpus Christi. Can you repeat what percentage of your volumes have you already secured with contracts? And can you tell us the conditions for under those contracts? Do they imply similar prices than you had in the average in 2016, or how do they compare?
You mean for Corpus Christi?
Yes. Have you been able to secure any of your volumes with contracts or not?
We do have a significant portion of our PET volumes secured with contracts, but the contracts are not specific to any one plant. I mean, our contracts, we can supply from different plants. Okay.
And your contracts that you have recently signed, are they reflecting any deterioration in margins or, I mean, what's the positioning of Alpek in the competitive landscape ahead of the Corpus Christi opening?
Well, we have, Vanessa, the margins today are so low that we are trying to remain, we're not signing contracts with some exceptions for more than 1 year. Okay, we're not moving into signing contracts for more than a year because margins are so low. So if I was to sign contracts longer than a year, that would be, a disadvantage more than an advantage. We do have a couple of two-year contracts. I think we have a 1 3-year contract and 1 2-year contract that we signed this year. But other than that, we are trying to remain flexible in terms of margins for the reasons that I mentioned. I don't know if you heard what I said at the beginning. I mean, we are seeing, in the last, let's say, since third quarter 15, we have seen the lowest level of margins in PET in Asia, around $200, around $200 PET to paraxylene and MEG. Just for you to get an idea, we used to be in 2011, that margin was $394, okay? And this 200 level is below, we believe, is below the cash cost, which should be around 230 or something like that. So we don't want to have long-term contracts with this sort of margin environment. I do believe, as we mentioned, that the capacity utilization in PTA is starting to recover worldwide and in Asia in particular. And I do believe the margins will gradually improve over the next months or years. In fact, I would say it would be too early to say that margins are already increasing, but we already see a little bit of improvement in this. You know, in February over the previous years. Again, it's not for me to say that this is going to change that fast, but I'm convinced that there's much more upside than downside in the margins from now on. I believe the margins in Asia have reached a bottom, and they will start to recover. And I will tell you something else in my experience, and this is an opportunity to talk about other of our business. Sometimes margins increase gradually, but we just experiencing an interesting situation in our caprolactam business. Our caprolactam business, the margin last year of caprolactam to benzene were around $640, $650 per ton. We ended the year on a slightly better, close to $700. And just for your reference, this caprolactam business, all of a sudden in January and February, we are experiencing probably $1,100 margin. So all of a sudden, this business changed from $700 to $1,100 margin from 1 month to the other. So very difficult to forecast the margins. But indeed, this is an opportunity to say that in our guidance, we are assuming margin of caprolactam to benzene of $700. Okay, so again, the first couple of months, which we are a little bit higher than $1,100, that if that remains for the rest of the year, which is possible, that would be an upside to our guidance. Perhaps. $20 million more if the margins remain where they have been in the first 2 months. Mm. So this is just an example of how quickly these margins can change. And as I said, in polyester, we if there is going to be a change, we do believe this change is going to be for higher margins rather than lower margins. So again, things could change relatively quickly. And again, we're at a point where, the pressure is going to come to for the, you know, a lot of the companies in Asia to increase margins, because they've been burning cash for quite some time now. So there's always that possibility. But again, in our budget, we are assuming in our guidance, we're assuming the margin of PET to PX and MEG around $200 per ton. We're not assuming any increase.
Okay, that's very useful. Thank you, Pepe.
And we'll now take our next question, and it comes from Vicente Falanga. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, Jose Eduardo Hernan. Just going back quickly to your guidance, you know, you mentioned $700 per ton for caprolactam. What is the gross margin on a cents per pound that Alpek is using for PP in North America, and also in dollars per ton for PET in Asia? Just so we can compare to our numbers. And regarding my second question, regarding your plant in Corpus Christi, sorry, I think I missed that. When do you expect that to actually start up? And what is the average utilization rates you are considering for the first few months of operation? And, you know, is this initially low, potentially low operating rates negatively affecting your EBITDA guidance for this year? Thanks.
Okay, look, as I mentioned, for our guidance, let me, for you and for the rest, you know, we're assuming a polypropylene to propylene margin of 18 cents per pound. This is in Mexico, well, in the U.S.,
okay.
Let's say. In the case of PET, I told you before, we are assuming a margin of PET to PX and MEG of around $200 per ton.
Okay, all right.
And in the case of caprolactam, I told you already, 700. In the case of Corpus, we are not, in our assumption, we are not assuming that Corpus will start this year. We're assuming that Corpus will start, I mean, in the commercial quantity. We expect it will start this year, but we're not assuming that in the budget.
Okay? All right.
So again, I mean, that could potentially be an upside. If the plant starts, you know, second half this year, that would be an upside. But for the time being, we're not assuming that to happen.
Okay. And just very helpful, thank you. And just to follow up in Corpus, I mean, you know, we understand that your margins in North America, they're protected by the BP formula. But, you know, could somehow the startup of Corpus Christi, you know, bring pressures to prices in North America and then pressure your margins there too? Or are your margins, you know, completely shielded here?
Well, I really believe that the answer to that question depends very much on whether we are successful or not in the anti-dumping and countervailing duties against these new players. As I mentioned, I think the imports that we are seeing in North America this last year were 600,000, north of 600,000 tons. If we were to be successful against those imports, I do believe that the margins in North America could continue to be reasonable. Otherwise, there is the risk of the margins perhaps going south, but again, I would say that we do believe that these anti-dumping cases, again, if we're successful, that would probably make the start-up of Corpus Christi, damaging to the margins. Okay.
Okay. All right. Great. That's perfect. Thank you very much. Very clear.
Next is Felipe Santos with J.P. Morgan.
Hey, Pepe. Eduardo. Just on follow-up question. Besides your plastic chemicals business, You have the three main categories, the PP, EPS, and caprolactam. Which of those are the weakest point in driving this downward revision in EBITDA? This is the first question. The second, we got the impression before that polyester business was also weak, but apparently from what you have said during this call, it's not that weak. It continues kind of okay, and depending on the capacity addition. Could you elaborate a little bit on that? Thank you.
Well, I would say, look, in the past couple of years, I would say polypropylene and expandable polystyrene have been relatively strong to very strong. The return on investment in those assets or in those businesses has been very high. 40% or higher on a yearly basis. We have had a very strong return in those two businesses, polypropylene and EPS. But caprolactam has been very low. The last couple of years, the last two or three years, margins of caprolactam in Asia were extremely low. Remember, we export a lot of our production to Asia. So our business in caprolactam last couple of years has been, close to zero EBITDA. Okay? Now, this year, as a result of some cost improvements we have made, and a little bit of improvement in margins, we're budgeting a little bit more than that. We're budgeting a positive EBITDA. But if the margins were to remain at the present existing level, I think caprolactam, we could have a very, a good surprise. We could probably, reach, as I mentioned, close to $30 million EBITDA in caprolactam. Okay? So that is the situation. But unfortunately, this improvement in caprolactam is somehow does not compensate for the decrease in polypropylene and EPS. Although the returns again in polypropylene and EPS are still good, it's just not as high as last year. But the piece of good news is that although polypropylene and EPS are going to be lower this year in EBITDA, well, caprolactam is going to help somewhat. And again, this improvement in caprolactam is not really fully included in the guidance. This has been a very recent development, and we believe it's too early to do that right now. I think we will, depending on how it goes, we will probably address this in the middle of the year or something like that. If this situation is maintained, I think we will be able to do that. I also mentioned that we had a better start in the year in polypropylene and EPS than we had expected. We had a very strong January, actually. So all of these, we want to wait a couple of months and see if this is sustained, if we can review the guidance. But again, the answer to your question, polypropylene and EPS, although not as good as last year, remain, with acceptable or more than acceptable returns, and the caprolactam, which has been very low in the last couple of years, two, three years, is now coming back to life, or it looks like. So that's the situation. In polyester, you mentioned we have acceptable returns. I don't think so. I think in polyester there is a lot of room for improvement. Honestly, when you look at our numbers, perhaps our numbers, they show only a relatively small variation. But keep in mind that in that business, we have had this cogeneration in Cosolecaque, and also we have the new this capacity reservation for glycol. So the improvement in those two are compensating for weaker results in polyester. So again, I do believe in polyester there is room for improvement. And we do believe this will have to come later, not only through Corpus Christi, but also we do believe that some margin improvement is still possible.
I see. Okay, thank you so much.
The next is Aiden Rodriguez with GMB Capital.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for taking my call. Just one question regarding the possible sale of the cogeneration plant. Could this include Altamira? And could you also explain the rationale behind this? Thank you.
Yes, okay, good. Good question. Look, the reason for this COSOLECAC or for us being evaluating the divestment, partial or total divestment of COSOLECAC, has to do with two factors, really. Number one is that this project, COSOLECAC, is already operating. We have everything is sold under a contract, I mean, relatively long-term contracts, 15 years perhaps. The plan is operating reasonably well. We're still waiting for some improvements. So yeah, that for sure that plan is close to being is closer to the, you know, steady state. We have received a lot of inquiries from different investors that are interested in participating in that project, and we do believe that, you know, valuation could be attractive based on all these comments I made, and so that's the one part of what we are considering. We're considering to look at that because we believe we can probably get a good value. Our preference would be to divest only partially, but we are going to open the process for you know, to consider all alternatives. And of course, if we do not get an attractive valuation, we will not go ahead with sale. And the other reason that, you know, why we're considering this asset, this sale, is the following, is the fact that now with this acquisition or potential acquisition of Petrobras, this divestment will become very handy in order for us to avoid going higher than the 2.5 ratio that we were mentioning before. Okay, so that's the other part of the rationale. On the one hand, a lot of interest from different investors, and this together with the Petrobras opportunity, and that's why we're considering to look at opportunities. And for us, honestly, ideally in the long term, we would like to have even a minority position to continue to run the plant. Remember, this plant is inside our facility, and and the efficiency and reliability of our plant depends very much on the cogen. So our ideal situation is a situation where we maintain some ownership and perhaps the operation of the plant. Okay, and then we get this money. Remember, in Mexico there are now new instruments that perhaps make this project be more valuable to other investors than to us. One of these is the e-fiber or Fibra E. Okay, well, you put these assets in that, you have some tax advantages and those type of considerations. And in fact, part of the people that have been approaching us is you know, companies that are creating or that have those e-fiber, and for them to load new assets into those fibers is very valuable. So that's part of the, again, the logic. Now, your question with Altamira. Altamira is not yet in a steady state. We have contracted, you know, I mentioned 20%. I believe it's more like 33% of the volume already that we have under contract. The Altamira project is honestly very attractive for us. We had mentioned that we were expecting around $80 million EBITDA for these assets. The latest numbers we have done indicate an even higher EBITDA than that. And for that reason, Altamira, of course, I mean, if somebody comes and makes a very attractive proposal, we will consider it. But we do believe the timing for Altamira, the best timing will be a little bit after, once we have more progress in terms of reducing the execution risk and reducing the market risk, meaning that we have more contract signed. So, again, in the case of Altamira, we, of course, if we have offers, we will look at those. But perhaps, you know, it will be better timing in the future. And we have to consider that in an important way. The other factor that I would say is going to be very important for us if you look at power rates, electricity rates in Mexico since 2014 to today, they have decreased very drastically. They have decreased significantly, somewhere between 30 and 40%. We do believe, or not believe, we know that CFE is losing money, significant money, and these days. And we, according to our calculations, we do believe that rates from CFE have to go up. Our contracts are mostly based to CFE rates. So again, we do believe that in the next year, 2 years, rates are going to go up. And then I would say that's the other issue that we are dealing with, that when rates go up, then the EBITDA of our projects will be even higher. And so in this process that we're going to be undertaking, well, you know, we have to whoever wants to buy, that will have to be a consideration. But, in response to your question, if we were to get a very, reasonable or attractive offer for Altamira, I think perhaps we would be willing to sell part of it. But if not, we believe we will wait until the right timing. And I think a couple of years from now, we could get much more, much better value for the Altamira assets. Again, Cosolacaque, since it's almost fully developed, the upside is not as high. And that's why we are considering Cosolacaque as the most likely scenario.
Okay, great. Thank you for your comments. Very informative.
Bye.
And we'll now go to Diego Mendez with ITAU.
Yes, hi. So I have main three questions. The first one is in terms of PP volumes that we're expecting for 2017. I remember last year when you had all the problems with imports from Asia, the demand from you ended up dropping. So how is the import from Asia going forward, and how should you think about that? The second one is related to working capital. Eduardo, you mentioned that the working capital is going to reduce during 2017, and we saw some consumption of working capital in the fourth quarter. So just trying to understand what are the main drivers here. And the last one, if you could just quantify the losses caused by Hurricane Matthew. Thank you.
Yeah, let me answer some of the questions, and I'll ask Eduardo to help me with some others. But with respect to polypropylene volume, again, I told you that the margins we're expecting for the guidance, or we're assuming for the guidance this year, is 18 cents per pound. 17 cents per pound, 18 cents per pound. Last year, we have, in average, honestly, more like 26 cents per pound. So when we, at the peak of last year, margins last year, there was a point where we had, I mentioned, close to 30 cents per pound. That's when we started to see imports from Asia coming into North America. But since then, imports have been coming down drastically. And not only that, actually we've seen exports of polypropylene from the U.S. to other places. So we are not expecting, with the new sort of margin that we are assuming, we do not expect that we will have significant imports from Asia this year in 2017. And the other important factor is that propylene prices, are now very similar in Asia than in the U.S. So as long as we can maintain that parity between raw material in Asia and the U.S., I don't see that, and that's our assumption, that they will be very similar throughout this year. I don't think that we will see significant imports from Asia this year. So again, that's going to be, again, that's not an issue. So the in polypropylene business, the issue is not really volume, it's more margin. That, as I explained to you this last year, we did have an extraordinary margin of 26 cents per pound. Okay, that's 26 cents versus 17 cents we're assuming for this year. So that gives you 9 cents per pound difference. And you know, rough numbers, 1 cent per pound is equivalent to $10 million a year of EBITDA. So that's the situation with the polypropylene. And you mentioned about working, I mean, you asked something about working capital. And, well, the Hurricane Matthew, it did create a lot of logistic problems for us. We had to shut down at a time three PET plants, and it created a lot of logistic nightmares and shutting down and starting up plants. And we did have some impact from that problem. But today, what I can tell you is we fully recover from that situation. And hopefully we will not see anything like that this year. In working capital, I think it's a very interesting question, and I will ask Eduardo to help me explain that.
Hi, Diego. We do expect a recovery in net working capital for 2017 of about half of the last year's investment. The investment came basically on several fronts. On polyester, at the end of the year, we had an increase in inventory, in particular raw materials, as well as the incorporation of the new Selenis facility in Canada. And also, we had some changes in some raw material suppliers, which we are finalizing the new logistics for those suppliers. So hopefully that will help reduce the investment in net working capital for this year. In addition to that, we also had a significant amount of pending recovery of value-added taxes in our plastics and chemical businesses, in particular the new EPS businesses, which we have seen a significant progress during these 2 months of the year. So all in all, as I mentioned, we do expect a recovery of about half of the investment that we did last year for 2017.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And we'll go to Gilberto Garcia.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for the call. A couple of questions, if I may. First, on potential entry into Brazil, have you already received approval from your board and Alfa's board for the transaction, should it be approved on Petrobras' side? And should you, for whatever reason, decide to pull back from the deal, would you incur in any sort of breakaway fees to Petrobras? And the second question, you mentioned that you're not considering Corpus Christi for your guidance. What about the contribution for your other smaller projects that you have that we have talked about in the past? What are your expected contributions from those projects? Thank you.
Okay, well, with regards to Petrobras, I think if you remember, we signed this we signed the agreement end of last year, and both companies, we had 60 days to be able to request or to get, you know, their board approvals. In our case, it's the Alfa board. This project has already been approved by the Alpec board. It's still pending approval by Alfa's board. And from the Petrobras side, I think they were gonna present the project to the shareholders, assembly. Given the fact that of this injunction, Petrobras decided to sort of freeze the project, freeze in the sense that they did not present this project for approval in the shareholders. They will do that once the injunction is resolved. And we in Alpha, I do believe we're going to present this to the Alpha board in the next days. But I think in practical terms, what this means is once the injunction is suspended, I think we will both parties will go back to their boards for a quick, very quickly for approval, and to continue with the process. And as Eduardo explained, once we have both boards approve the project, we do estimate, due to regulatory issues, that it would probably take around 6 months to be able to finalize, to close the deal. It mostly is the antitrust in Brazil. I think that's the pending item. And this is called CADE. So what we have learned is that it takes normally 4 to 6 months for them to approve a project like this. So that is the status, I think, with Petrobras. Now, in terms you were asking other projects, right? The one project that I do believe we have included in the guidance is the expansion of EPS. Huh?
Yes. Yeah. The guidance includes Gilberto the full year operation of COSO and Huntsman. Those are the two strategic projects already finished. Together, both projects we expect a benefit of about $35 million in 2017, and in addition to that, we do expect the startup during 2017 of Corpus, as we mentioned before, but also the expansion of EPS in Altamira and the propylene spheres also in Altamira. In the case of EPS, we do not expect a significant benefit this year, since the expansion will be ramping up, so we do expect the benefits, full benefits, next year.
I think you also questioned. I mean, you made a question about the back. I mean the break fees in case of PQS. There is no such a thing since we have not. Signed the agreement. I mean, it's pending approval of the board. So at this point in time, if that were to be suspended or canceled, there would not be break of fees for us or for them.
Okay, understood. Thank you very much.
And we'll now go to Till Moez with Schroeder.
Yes, hello, and thanks for taking my questions. First one is on anti-dumping. Can you share some numbers by how much you think those competitors are dumping? And secondly, I think you said you're going to file or expecting to file this by the end of the second quarter. When would you expect a preliminary and when a final determination?
We are not at a point where I could share with you the sort of dumping that it will be involved. But I the only thing I can tell you is that it will be significant. And if anything, I can remind you of the dumpings we got in the previous case with Canada, China, et cetera, particularly with the Asian, with China, we got dumpings in excess of 100%. And I would say some of these imports, at least the ones coming from Asia, should be similar. They are coming in at similar prices. In terms of the timing, I don't know. I mean, the first thing is the government has to analyze. So the case, and if they find that there is a cause, they probably take somewhere between 6 months and a year. Preliminary 6 months and then the final in a year. But remember, once the preliminary, if they find that indeed there's a dumping or countervailing, once they find that and they issue a preliminary number, that is enough to curtail a lot of the imports. Because, it's very risky for customers or for themselves to continue to import.
Yeah, we saw that.
So that is the... That would be more or less, I think, the timing.
Okay. All right, thank you.
And there are no other questions, so I would like to turn it back to Mr. Lozano for any additional or closing remarks.
Thank you. I would just like to thank everyone for participating in today's call, and please feel free to contact us in case you have any follow-up questions or comments. Have a nice day.
Thank you very much. That does conclude our conference for today. I'd like to thank everyone for your participation.